7:06. We're back on a Friday morning, the John and Gordy Show. As we were saying, lots of things happening around Madison this weekend. Coming up in just a little while, a little bit later on this half hour, we'll be talking with John Roach about what's going on at the UW, and also a little bit about Bobby Knight, who passed away a couple of days ago.
Well, that'll be interesting.
At the age of 83. Bobby Knight, yes, the legendary coach for Indiana, volatile temper, but an amazing coach.
I guess we'll
people
touch
either
on the
loved
fact
him
that he
or
was.
Hated him, and his players really loved him mostly. Yeah. But you know, he was different. He was had that temper. Occasionally would flare. Remember he threw the chair across the basketball court?
Yeah, quite memorable moment in sports.
It is. The wide world of sports. The agony of defeat.
Yeah. The House approved funding for Israel.
Okay.
And
that passed?
Yeah. They're going to take some money out of the IRS, so the IRS can't, go after the tax cheats that are making money hand over fist.
The IRS. That's cool. Yeah, they get money coming in all the time. Take a little bit of money away from them for a change.
Big deal, right?
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, it's
a deal,
not a
is
big
it?
Deal. No.
IRS, they can print money. Just go to the mint.
It'll only be, $12 billion deficit?
Get the printing presses going.
That's all they'll miss.
Why don't they just make more money?
So...
just print up some more. Who cares?
I know. Who cares, right? We print it. We spend it. We borrow it. We lend it out.
Do you know that they can print, if they needed to, they could print like a $1 trillion coin?
Yeah.
Could just do that,
right,
and then call it $1 trillion, and then, you know, that takes care of some debt.
Yeah, there's a whole concept out there.
It's just a concept.
We really don't have a deficit.
Right.
The concept is that we print the money,
mm-hmm,
and again, we lend it out, we spend it. It's our own system, and we don't have a deficit with ourselves.
Okay.
So that is the philosophy. I actually agree with that, but there are a lot of people that don't. So,
boy, don't you wish that your checking account worked just like that? If it just, you know, it was a conceptual thing.
It does.
Like, well,
mine does.
I got checks. Let's just write one.
Mine does.
Yeah.
But so we have every one of our representatives in Congress, every Republican, voted for this deal.
Yeah.
And by the way, I don't know if the deal also included, this was talked about prior, the fact that everyone out there that wants to file their taxes online, but they don't have a long extensive amount of deductions or anything like that.
What?
You know, they have a very simple process of just filing their taxes every year, and they can do it online.
Okay.
And it was supposed to be free.
Mm-hmm. Right.
This deal was supposed to repeal that.
What?
Yes.
Why?
That to pay for, you know, sending money to Israel.
Doesn't make any sense.
And they wanted to take away the free part of filing online. And of course, you know why. There's software makers out there that want to get, you know, your money.
Yeah.
To do it online.
Right.
So I don't know if that was included. They haven't mentioned it, but I just want to mention that Tom Tiffany, our embarrassment in the House, he said this: the U.S. should not send another penny to Ukraine, especially when there is no accountability for where the money is going.
Okay.
Tiffany and Derek Van Orden and Scott Fitzgerald voted against the $300 million aid package to Ukraine in late September. So,
okay,
just a little reminder about our little friend Tom Tiffany. All right.
Okay. Well, yeah. Tell me.
When he was here.
Yeah.
He was a senator, state senator, and he is responsible for some really bad stuff in Wisconsin. And I want to take a little trip, Gordy.
Yeah.
It's a little trip into the time tunnel.
John and Gordy's time tunnel
is back.
Oh,
we got it working.
I can't wait. Yeah.
A swift kick got that time tunnel working. You want to
hit the switch?
Okay. Two American scientists are lost in the swirling maze of past and future ages during the first experiments on America's greatest and most secret project, the time tunnel.
Oh. And those two scientists are back, John and Gordy.
Dizzy from the time total.
It's something else. We're going to go back to the year 2019.
All the way back there?
June 4th.
Yeah.
And Tom Tiffany found a magical way to balance business interests with the environment. Now, I'm reading this from my blog, okay? Democurmudgeon.blogspot.com.
Yeah.
And Tony Evers, at the time, was the governor.
Yeah.
So way back when, right? He attempted to resume climate research, and that didn't sit well with Tom Tiffany. He doesn't like that climate research stuff.
Mm.
Tiffany says, that was certainly one of the red flags for me. Red flag. Trying to reestablish the Science Bureau is certainly a red flag for me.
Mm.
Just wrap your head around that idea. Oh, mm-hmm. You know, getting that Science Bureau, that is a red flag. What a horrible thought. I wrote here, Republicans, friends of farmers, sportsmen, and tourism, if you like wading in contaminated water and mud, maybe. Mm. Let's just look at the water problem. Tiffany was a driving force behind the 2015 cuts and the subsequent elimination of the Science Bureau. That's right, the elimination of it. He opposes environmental regulation he sees as needlessly hindering businesses. So now, of course, you know, everybody in Wisconsin is dying from cancer, from the drinking water.
Mm.
Everybody has to put in their under-the-sink osmosis machines, reverse osmosis machines, so they can drink their water.
Science.
Or they have a closet filled with bottled water. So it's only more of an expense for the American people and Wisconsinites because these guys want to contaminate our water.
Yeah.
And so, Tom Tiffany, thank you for that wonderful moment in history.
Thank you very little.
Yes.
Wow. Well, that was quite a trip in the time tunnel.
Well, you know, the scientists have returned us, and, you know, we have discovered many, many different things in the past.
Science is a baffling thing for the government.
It's a red flag for me.
Yeah, is it? Yeah, we don't want to believe that, you know, I mean, that's what the flat earthers say. Oh, science, it's the earth is flat. Prove it otherwise. You know, it's, come on. What's the matter with people?
I got this, you brought this up. Yeah, I wish I had the track.
What?
There's a flat earther track.
Yeah,
and this guy is being interviewed, and he's asked, well, you know, so where does the sun go down, and where does it come up on this flat Earth thing that you have going?
Yeah,
and he goes, and this flat Earth guy is convinced that everybody has their own sun. Okay, so
what?
Yes, so Madison has their own sun, New York has their own sun. And it's just flat, and everybody's got these suns hanging over them. And, of course, the guy doing the interview is going, I can't wrap my head around this. No, this doesn't make any sense to me. You're saying this, aren't you? That everybody has a sun? Oh, yeah. We all have our suns.
They're making up their own science.
Flat earther.
Yeah.
Oh, man, there's some priceless stuff.
A lot of knuckleheads out there when it comes to science, making up your own science.
Well, it's a red flag for me when I see science. So Tom Tiffany thinks this is a House Representative Tom Tiffany thinking that science, any presence of science is a red flag for him. So that's the kind of guy we have watching over us.
Yeah. Whew. Boy, that's a lot of
hand signals.
It's a lot of process. We're okay.
Stop him?
No. sometimes. Back to the jogging report. The joggers are heading back up to the Capitol. It's kind of spread out.
See,
now.
The only reason we're bringing it up because this hasn't happened all week.
Well, this is our first week here, so we wouldn't know. Maybe it happens every Friday. It's like the jogging club of the Friday morning.
We should have checked the local newspaper, Isthmus, see if there's some kind of jogging event down here.
We should, right? You know, next Friday, let's get a microphone out there and I'll
dangle it out the window.
Yeah.
Scream
try
from
to stop,
here.
You know. Yeah, see if we can talk to some of the joggers, if they'll take a few moments to, you know, chat with us.
There has to be some event.
It's a club. I'm sure it's a jogging club. It's a running club. You know, I bet you next Friday, anything. I bet you dollars to donuts, they're back Friday morning.
Seeing people up this early in the morning, outside jogging is a red flag for me.
So, going against your personal science now is our problem
with
that.
You know, I exercise all the time.
Do you?
Oh, yeah.
You're in good shape.
I am.
Do you do that at home or do you go to Planet Fitness?
Firmly working on the core.
Yeah?
The core.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're pretty ripped, huh? You're
no.
saying you got the six pack going? You want to
no.
show everybody on Facebook?
No,
what are you going
do
for
that.
Here?
Cannot do that. But, yeah. I can't. My body physically cannot have a six pack. Genetically, it just didn't let me
drink
do
a
that.
Six pack right now, but
yeah,
sir, it's a little early, early
that's
in
right.
the day.
I could show that kind of six pack, but
it's 17 past the hour. Weather for today, cloudy skies, John. It's mild out there, 43 degrees, expecting highs up around 50. We might see a couple of scattered showers. You know, take the umbrella along with you. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Don't forget to check your windshield wipers every spring.
Okay, we got the feels like temp at 37 degrees.
Oh, boy, that's important this
high
time of year.
50, and let me see here. We're going to be at 8 a.m. No rain and 42 degrees predicted.
And what about the weekend, John? Saturday and Sunday, mid-40s. It's feeling not bad the next couple of days.
Yeah, after it's going to be great.
That cold snap earlier in the week, we had that frost.
About 56, and by the way, on Monday, they're predicting 60 degrees.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But rain on Monday and Tuesday,
yeah, climate change. You know, we need to get somebody in here and talk about climate change.
That's a red flag for me.
Let's work on that. Is it? Everything's a red flag for you. Coming up at 18 past the hour, we're going to take a brief time out, but when we come back, we'll talk to John Roach, an old buddy of the John and Gordy show, and we're going to check out what he has to say about Bobby Knight, the passing of the legendary Indiana basketball coach, and a few other things with John Roach coming up right around the corner.
Yeah, you know, I'm not a sports fan by any stretch of the imagination.
You used to be so into the Packers.
I was, but
you
a
named one of your
friend.
Sons after Brett Favre, right?
That's true.
Okay,
that's true. Yeah. And he wanted his name changed after a while.
We'll find out why.
I convinced him not to change it.
Okay. John and Gordy show rolling on for Friday morning, and currently here 43 degrees. Going to be a good looking weekend, as we mentioned before. A couple of days ago, Bobby Knight passed away at the age of 83, the legendary NCAA basketball coach for Indiana. And did you know, John Peterson, that in 1968, Bobby Knight was offered a job at the University of Wisconsin basketball coach in 1968. But the deal fell through. The deal fell through because the news got leaked to the press from the administration, and Bobby Knight didn't like that, so he changed his mind, ended up at Indiana.
Threw a chair and left.
Well, that's what happened. And John Roach is on the line with us from Roach Projects, and John... good to have you with John and Gordy this morning. How you doing?
Hi, John and Gordy. How you guys doing?
Good. Real good. Real good. We, you know, we were working together at one time, I believe. Didn't you put together a Badger video tape of their history at one time?
What are you talking about?
I've done a lot of stuff at one time. I've been in production since about, I started out in production in Chicago in the late 70s.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's kind of funny because people remind me of things I've done where I'm going, oh, yeah, okay, sure, yeah, I did that. But, you know, after 40, 45 years, you know, I started out in Chicago at WLS Television. And
you were working for Oprah, right?
The show that became Oprah, AM Chicago. So that was five, you know, 1 hour shows a week for 2 years. So there's
beautiful,
you know, there's about 500 shows right there that, you know, I remember a lot of them, but they're all in the hard drive. Sometimes it's hard to pull them back up.
And also, when you were in Chicago, you created or helped to create the Sports Writers on TV, which explained to everybody what that format was, because I loved watching that show.
Thanks, Gordy. Yeah. No, I created the show and produced it. It was four grizzled Chicago sports writers sitting around a table, smoking cigars and talking about the stories of the day, which oftentimes, you know, went beyond sports. I think sports is always best when it transcends sports. And it was Bill Gleason, Bill Jouse, Ben Bentley, and Rick Tellinger of Sports Illustrated. The other guys were Chicago beat guys. And eventually it became quite a cult hit, and we ran for 13 years, syndicated all over the country. And
when did it run?
I commuted from Madison every Monday to do the show. So it was about 850 round trips.
What year did that start, and when did it wrap up?
We started in 84, 85. Okay. And went until about 2000, 2001. So it was a great run. Kind of a cult hit. We had all sorts of interesting guests, from, you know, Pat Sajak to every mayor of Chicago to Georgie Wendt of the Bears the Bulls fame.
Let me ask you about that.
Mike Ditka.
It was a bit on Saturday Night Live, right? I remember that.
So Second City, you know, we were popular in Chicago, and Second City, obviously a famous Chicago comedy location. They did a sketch about the sports writers. And then all the writers and some of the talent who first did it at Second City all moved on to SNL. And so that became the Bears the Bulls sketch, which obviously Madison's favorite son, Chris Farley, was on, along with George Wendt and some others. So, yeah, that's kind of how we made our way into cultural
history.
Yeah.
Talking with John Roach
kind of
here.
Kind of fun.
It was.
Yeah,
it was.
And John, now talk a little bit about this Bobby Knight. I saw you post something on Facebook yesterday or day before about the passing of Bobby Knight.
Yeah. So you know, doing the Sports Writers on TV, one of our writers, Bill Jouse, covered, you know, he covered Bobby and was friends with Bobby and drank beer with Bobby. I actually played three holes of golf with Bobby Knight and Vince Gill and an golf outing in Madison, you know.
Wow.
But Knight was always good copy, but also always controversial. And there was little doubt that in his era, which was the 80s and 90s in Indiana, he was the dominant coach on stage, on the college basketball stage. This was before the ascendance of Mike Krzyzewski at Duke and others. But he won a handful of championships and owned the Big Ten for a while. He was a very disciplined dude. But I never was as enamored of Knight, because I felt that he abused his players. I was an athlete myself. And I think you cross a line when you put your hands on your players, and he did. He was from this old school of absolute authority. You know, in the era that I grew up in, we bestowed absolute authority on priests and police officers, politicians to some extent, and certainly to coaches. That era has kind of passed now that athletes have more latitude. They can earn money in college sports now. But Bobby Knight ruled like a medieval emperor. And I admired his kind of focus on the basics of basketball and the results he got. But I, as an athlete, I was completely turned off by the way he treated his athletes. I thought it was... he treated them like chattel instead of like young men. And
so you're saying that touching basically is not just hugging and, you know, all love.
No, it wasn't instructive. It was punishment.
It was punishment.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, look, it was abusive. So the irony is that he chafed at authority, but didn't hesitate to abuse it himself. And he demanded great discipline from his athletes, but did not exercise great discipline himself. So I found that to be pretty inconsistent.
Did you know about this story that back in 1968, he was actually offered the job at the University of Wisconsin?
Sure,
and he accepted it?
I was a punk kid. Yeah, I was a punk kid here in Madison. That's when the university athletic department was in a great deal of disarray. You know, they made an offer to him and then kind of screwed up the terms, at least by his code. And so he withdrew. I'm not sure he would have been a great fit at Wisconsin during the 60s, honestly. That probably worked out the best for all parties.
Wow. Yeah. So
some things were not just meant, weren't meant to be. You know?
Right.
But I will tell you this. Indiana would come to the field house in their candy striped warm up pants and just for decades kicked the Badgers' butt around the field house. And what I just delighted during the Bo Ryan era is Bo Ryan owned Indiana. Mm-hmm. And the novelty of the Badgers beating Indiana every time they saw him, that never got old for me, you know, because I couldn't believe that Wisconsin beat Indiana all the time. After, frankly, I was scarred during my childhood.
We can tell.
By Bobby Knight.
Wow. It's 28 past the hour. John, can you hang with us a few more minutes? We've got to take a brief time out here.
Sure.
And we'll come back with more with John Roach. We want to talk to you a little bit. I heard you talking a couple of weeks ago about the UW system and the downsizing and some of the extensions closing up. And I thought your comments were really interesting. I want to talk with our guest this morning, John Roach, as the John and Gordy Show continues in just a couple of minutes.
It's the John and Gordy Show.
Are you really you gonna do the falsetto again? You're gonna torture us,
not gonna
John
do
Peterson?
Not this time.
Come on. Been boasting about your Frankie Valli
falsetto. I haven't figured out my part in that yet. And okay. I just want to come up with something, right?
John and Gordy on a Friday morning. It is 7:35 now, and we've been visiting with John Roach from Roach Projects. And John is back with us as we come back from our time off.
John used to write for Madison Magazine.
Retired 30 years. 30 years.
8 months ago. Yeah. And I just want to also mention, my wife wrote for Madison Magazine, feature articles for Doug way back when. And it was fun. Writing for the public here, you know, saying things, you know, covering the topics that people love here in Madison. So
It was a pretty good run. It was the back page and, you know, pretty choice location and... but I'd said enough. It was time to move on.
Yeah. You know, I said that to Doug, too.
Yeah.
I used to write for Madison Magazine as well. I did a few restaurant reviews.
Yeah. And then he told you it was time to move
on. That's pretty
Isn't
much
that how it.
It
worked.
They ruthlessly edited my my reviews.
And a few years ago, John Roach had a book entitled Roach that's out there, right?
I did a couple compilation.
Of some of your
books,
columns.
From my old columns. One was called Way Out Here in the Middle, and the other one was called While I Have Your Attention.
Mm-hmm.
But they were just compilations.
Okay.
Just a fun little thing to do.
Now, you went to the UW, and you have other family members that went to the UW, and I want you to... expound a little bit. I was listening to you. You were a guest on Todd Allbaugh's show two, three weeks ago, and you were talking about the downsizing or the rebranding of the UW, and mentioned a little bit about where you were going with that, because I found this really fascinating, John. Your family went there. You went, and who else in your family?
Well, my dad played baseball at UW-Madison. I went to UW-Madison. My wife's a UW nursing school grad, and all three of my kids went to UW-Madison. So, and I was on the J School Board of Visitors for 6 years. So I'm a proud alum and proud of what the university has done for me, my family, and for our state. It's a huge driver for the state's economy. And unfortunately, you know, the drawdown of some of the system 2-year and 4-year schools is occurring. And it's been very polarizing politically, but I think you have to look at it in, you know, a longer context. First of all, if you look at it, there was a 4-year or 2-year college for every 3 counties in the state. Mm-hmm. And Wisconsin's only got just, you know, only 5.5 million people. That's a big spend for 5.5 million people. Back in the day when we were flush with post-World War II money and, you know, the state economy was kind of a different animal. We still had a thriving manufacturing economy. There were some resources, and also the university and all the system schools and the 2-year schools, they were run more cost effectively. But, you know, starting in the 80s and 90s, the economic sector that had the highest rate of inflation wasn't healthcare, wasn't housing, it was college tuition. College tuition skyrocketed mm-hmm. over the last 3 or 4 decades. And there's all sorts of reasons for it. But the truth is the people who paid for that inflation were students who had to take out onerous loans. I have people on that work with me who are in their 40s who are still paying off their student loans, mm-hmm. which to me is nuts. And I think that the Wall Street Journal did a pretty interesting analysis of why that was. And it wasn't, it was because higher ed added a lot of bureaucracy. They didn't pay professors a lot more, mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of bureaucracy with the university and the system schools. You know, I saw a kid with when my kids were graduating, I saw a kid with a mortar board during commencement, and she just had written on the top of her mortar board, "I paid $120,000 for this hat." I'm all for education, but I've always felt like it wouldn't kill us to reorganize higher ed. Mm-hmm. There's another thing that's occurred. The internet has happened. Mm-hmm. So knowledge is more widely available in different forms than in the old Memorial Union stacks, right? Where you went to read books to learn right. things. Now that's all readily available on the web. And so ironically, the web was created in academia. And yet I don't think they've done a very good job of adjusting to that new reality. Mm-hmm. And so this cost, and you know, no one less than Elizabeth Warren has taken higher ed to tax for some of its wretched excess. Mm-hmm. And so I think we just have to take a hard look at it and fit it for where the world is now and going forward than the way it used to be. And that is not anti-intellectual and it's not anti-education, but you know, change happens to us all, including higher ed.
Well, let me just ask you, you know, times change and needs and education requirements change. Wouldn't that kind of add to the administrative process at the UW as well? I mean, you know, you'd have to add things, new departments in order to take care of like the internet and, you know, online registration. And not only that, but what about, you know, defunding the university?
Well, I think online registration actually requires less staff.
Sure. Okay. Right. Yeah. But if they have the right computers, you know, if they had up-to-date computers.
Right. Yeah. You know, so much of everything is done online. Mm-hmm. Look, John, I'm not an expert on higher education bureaucracies. All I know is that they have grown.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there is attendant cost with that. Interestingly enough, professors' salaries haven't gone up.
Right.
Radically. Right. Mm-hmm. The overhead at universities has come more from bureaucracy. If you read the actually the Wall Street Journal analyzed the University of Minnesota, which is another large land grant university. And I found a lot of similarities there. Obviously the Wall Street Journal has a right of center slant. It's a Rupert Murdoch publication, but I thought there were some salient facts in that piece. You have to discern and sift and winnow, as right. I was taught at the university.
Right.
But there was, I thought there were some good points to be made about bureaucratic costs. And I have a small business. My little shop has 10 people, mm-hmm. and I'm not a big fan of bureaucracies, mm-hmm. you know? And I sometimes question their efficiencies. And I think that big organizations are just like any organism. They have this drive to grow and replicate, mm-hmm. right? That bureaucracies grow, mm-hmm. and that people protect their fiefdoms and want to sure. increase their budgets. That's just the nature of the beast.
Right.
I don't think it's anti-intellectual to say, should we consider reorganizing certain bureaucracies to prepare for the future mm-hmm, and sure. for today? And I don't think that's necessarily political. I do think that it has become politically charged in Wisconsin, because Wisconsin is one of the most bifurcated states in the union. Mm-hmm. I wish there were more moderates where, you know, because I do think the work gets done in the middle. And unfortunately, there is no middle these days.
Talking with John Roach here and about the UW. What do you think about the legislature blocking the pay increases for the 35,000 UW employees across the state?
I think that what has happened with state government is incredibly sad. I think the legislature, there are some radical right people in the legislature who are not about progress or about getting things done. They're more about ideology.
Yep.
And I think it's embarrassing and shameful. And when I say that, I'm talking about, you know, kind of MAGA right-wing Republicans mm-hmm. who don't believe in elections and science and education. I'm not saying all of the guys in the legislature that way, but too many of them.
Well, we have Steve
Knotts. It's a shame. It's a shame. By the way, I was seated next to Tom Tiffany at a dinner once.
Oh, God. That must have been a great conversation.
I don't think he cared for me.
No. Now, here's the thing. You know, Walker put in a tuition freeze, and the state itself did not backfill the money lost at the UW in order to, you know, pay for that in some way, shape, or form. So that's hurt. Expansion of departments, of classes, class sizes, like the engineering department, they wanted to expand that greatly because it's a job creator and there's a huge demand sure. for it. And, you know, the legislature decided that is something they weren't going to do because it was the number one thing the UW wanted to do. Again, it was punishment. Sure. It was payment. Back from that.
No, can I tell you, it's sad. I mean, you can get reelected to the legislature every 2 years, you know, north of Stevens Point by just ripping on UW and UW professors mm-hmm. and ripping on Madison, right? That's how it is, right?
Right.
And it's tragic because I do think the university is a driver of the economy. There's no question about it. But the flip side is you just don't, and look, you're asking me to give you a rational opinion of the state legislature and its relationship with reality. I don't think that's to be done. But, you know, there was a time when Tommy Thompson, who was a Republican, mm-hmm. Sat down at the table with David Ward and other chancellors and hammered out the biotech initiative, mm-hmm. which I think is created tons of job. And it's not done creating jobs for the state of Wisconsin. He wasn't anti-intellectual. He's a Wisconsin grad. And, but I don't think those, I'd like to find more of those Republicans. Mm-hmm. Right now, I think that the Republican Party has been affected by Trump and Fox News, and it's been radicalized. And there is precious little middle.
Yeah.
Well, that's the truth of it. John, we can't let you get away. We only have a couple of minutes left here, but we want to go back in the time tunnel here for a moment. John and I, John Peterson and I, will never forget the night that we were all at the Madison, the Best of Madison Awards at the Edgewater. And this was probably the last time we all saw each other together.
Yeah.
But it was the night for that awards. I was one of the co-hosts with that, with one of the Farley brothers. And then afterwards,
Kevin Farley.
Kevin was there, and the whole Farley family was there, including Chris. And we were at the bar after the ceremonies, and all of a sudden, the OJ Bronco chase started. And then we ended up in a motel, down the hall in a room with the entire Farley family.
We were at the Edgewater, and they had a kind of hospitality suite for the house and everything.
That's
and
what it was.
We come back to the room, and the OJ White Bronco chase is happening. And so myself and Chris Farley and everyone's watching it. And, you know, Chris by that time was a pretty experienced Hollywood dude.
Yeah.
You know, we're both, you know, sitting there going, you know, effectively narrating what was going on.
The entire family
was going, I think he's going to kill himself. I think he's going to kill himself. And I said, no, he's too cowardly to kill himself. You know,
well, the whole family, mom and dad were chirping in and everybody was. It was just.
No, it was running commentary. I wish we would have been able to live stream it, but I don't think live streaming existed then.
Yeah, that would have been great comedy. Absolutely.
It was something. Yeah. Well, John, thank you for visiting with us this morning. We appreciate your time, and we'd love to have you back on again.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys, congratulations on the new, on the return.
Thanks
for having me.
All right.
John Roach, joining John and Gordy on the Friday morning show. Great to have him back. Great to reconnect with
John. That's right.
Yeah.
Fun times. We were hosting that.
Yeah.
Best of Madison.
Well, yeah, we were there. I had won an award, and we were Best of Madison. I was hosting, as John mentioned, with Kevin Farley, and the Farley family was there. There were a lot of people there. Kate Jackson was there from Charlie's Angels. She was there.
Really?
Yes.
You were there with Kate Jackson?
She was
in
the audience. She came up with one of the award people. Anyway, it's a long story.
I can't believe
we don't
have
time for it right now. We got to take a brief time out here. 7:49, back with more. Welcome back.
Mad Radio.
10 before the top of the hour.
92.7. Yeah. WMDX. I mean, if you're watching this, you know, I struggle with these headphones.
We both
do. The ear cups keep, you know, folding in and out. And I'm just...
No, they're really nice headphones. They're great headphones. Yeah. We appreciate the headphones.
Make us sound real good in our ears.
But when you're in a hurry and you, we're back on. We got to grab the headphones. Then they don't want to cooperate with you. Somehow.
Right.
It's like, oh, you're in a hurry? Yeah, we're not going to cooperate. Anyway.
Oh, you got the better headphones, by the way.
What do you mean? We have identical headphones.
They're not.
Are they not?
No, look.
Oh. You got the Sonys, and I don't know what these are. I don't see a name brand on them. What, you want to switch headphones now?
No.
We
got a third set of headphones in here.
Why don't you try those? You're not happy with your headphones? Why don't you try something else?
Actually,
you don't like the lighting? What, is it too bright? Is it too not your...
Most of the time,
right. See you now. It's always something.
Yeah.
Come in every morning and start complaining right off the bat. Not even a hi, hello, how are you
Who,
doing?
Me?
Yes, you. You are the complainer. Always something. If there was a suggestion box here, remember the suggestion boxes in companies?
Yeah.
You would be stuffing that thing every day with suggestions. Well, why don't you have this? How come the lights don't work? What's going on over here? The office lights don't go on until 7 a.m. They're on a timer. Blah, 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 blah.
I know. It's
one thing after another
incessant.
With you, Peterson.
Never
and I'm
ending.
Getting out sick of it. Yeah, we're wrapping up our very first week here at Mad Radio.
Has it been a week?
Well, 5 days. Technically not a whole week. You're going to go there.
It feels like a month, right?
Well, we're just getting used to the studio, to our new surroundings here, a beautiful location right on State Street, just a block off the Capitol, seeing the early morning joggers go by on the Friday morning jogging club or whatever that is.
So, you know what I'd like to do is,
what?
You know, kind of get this ready for Christmas.
Really? You think it's Christmas time?
And we
could
put a little frosty frost
in the windows?
On the windows. We could spray it on there, right?
Again, you with the suggestions. Okay, why don't you do that? Why don't you bring in some decorations Monday morning? We'll just decorate while we're doing the show.
Yeah. Spray can.
It would be kind of nice. I mean, you're hearing Christmas music already on some radio stations. They're going 24/7 Christmas music. In Milwaukee, I know that started up. I wouldn't be surprised if some station in Madison does that anytime now, any day.
Oh, I hope they do.
Yeah? You like your Christmas music. I know you love the holiday stuff.
No. Yeah, the thing about Christmas music is this.
Yeah?
The new stuff sucks.
Okay.
And,
you don't like Mariah Carey?
No.
New to you?
No. Sucks. Christmas music should be the old stuff, the classic stuff. That's what it is. That's what it should be.
Yeah.
If you've ever watched A Christmas Carol.
Okay. Yeah.
The soundtrack, the movie
right.
has like the old traditional caroling.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just something about that. You know,
I
like the Andy Williams stuff, the Frank Sinatra stuff.
You're really going
the
with the
Perry
mind.
Como stuff.
Sure, you
that is
love
the
that.
Traditional stuff. Bing Crosby, you know, David Bowie, I guess, you know. But, you know, you know, it's the Christmas tradition. It's the good stuff. You don't want to hear all this, you know.
Now, we were talking earlier about the brand new Beatles song, right? Now and then. Great song, beautiful song. I love it. I love the Beatles. I'm a big Beatle fan. I've got, I've got a couple of dozen books on the Beatles.
Okay? But
there's one song by Paul McCartney. His Christmas song drives me absolutely crazy. I think it is the worst.
What's the name
song.
Of that song? I'm trying to think of it here.
Do you remember? Having a wonderful Christmas time.
Yeah.
Simply having
I agree.
Wonderful Christmas.
It's
now,
horrible.
What really drives me nuts, not only the insipid lyrics in it, and I'm a big Paul McCartney fan, don't get me wrong, but I think there was something, he had just bought this synthesizer. I think when he did this, and I think this was he was just testing it out. The thing is just loaded with annoying synthesizer. You know, remember when the synthesizer was brand
it was a big
new?
Deal.
Yeah. That's going all the time, all the way through the song. It's double or triple tracked, and it drives me absolutely crazy.
Now that you bring it
they
up.
They play that song all the time at Christmas.
What if, it were a slow song?
Okay.
What if he had done it in a slow version?
Well, flip side of that,
wouldn't that been
John and
much
Yoko
better.
Put out their Christmas song, which is a beautiful song.
It is.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember the name of it, but I don't have the Google machine fired up, so I don't know. But say it is Christmas. What have we done?
Yeah, it's a great song.
Another day older.
Yeah,
new year just begun.
A little overplayed.
Whatever it is.
Still a little overplayed.
I can't sing
now.
Like Lennon. Who can? But wow, just a beautiful song. So it's ironic, isn't it, that Lennon puts out a beautiful Christmas song,
right?
McCartney, I don't know.
I was just thinking.
I don't
want to
slam him.
We've been checking. Hey Google.
I don't think
when we need to find stuff.
Yeah, why don't you check it right now for something?
Hey Google, what did John Lennon sing for Christmas?
Okay, I don't hear anything.
Here are the top search results.
Okay. Yeah, what?
She's not going to tell us. It's called Happy Christmas.
Happy
the war
Christmas,
is over.
War is over.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, great song.
So
ask her
this
something
is
else.
Christmas, and that's another song.
That's it. No, that is the song.
And then the Beatles had their own Christmas.
Oh, they did
greetings.
Specials.
These were greetings, though, right?
Yeah.
They didn't do songs.
In the early years, they had a Christmas special, a TV Christmas special, but
they
also put out a Christmas 45.
Was that like
every
a,
year?
A British they, broadcast?
It was
that it?
It was just, it was a BBC production. We didn't get it. Okay. Oh, no. We got a couple of minutes.
I'd actually like to hear that.
Would you?
They did Christmas songs on it or just their songs as a Christmas special?
There's a whole collection of Christmas songs and Christmas specials that the Beatles did every year. And those are a little bit harder to find. You can find them, but and most of the time they were just goofing around. They were just riffing and would make up stuff and just put it out to their Beatle club, their Beatle fans.
Yeah.
That new Beatle song is out there, and it's going to grow on you after a while. Yeah. I think it's really good. Now and then, John Lennon.
I think the song is going to be a big hit only because of the publicity.
They've hyped it up really big. And they have a whole new package of the Red Collection, the Blue Collection, all just in time for Christmas.
Vinyl.
Who came up with that idea, right?
Yeah.
The Beatles did.
It's funny. It just happened at the holiday season.
Well, Paul and Ringo, they've been around a while. They've done marketing before.
Well, thank gosh,
get it
they're
all
around.
Yes. So. Thank goodness. Okay. Well, this is going to conclude our very first week here at WMBX.
We want everybody to jot down the telephone number, 608-879-8255 or 879-TALK. We want to always hear from you.
Talk to you next week.
Yep.
Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you Monday morning. So long.